I'm sure I mentioned to a few people over time that I've been challenging myself trying to learn another language. I've been trying to learn Spanish. Been at it for 5 or 6 years now. Haven't got very far, but I've been trying a little bit here and there. And what's interesting is when you're trying to learn another language, it helps to start with the more common words, the ones that are most likely to come up in a conversation. Have you ever thought what the most common word is in English? Back in 1992, there was a study by Godfrey of switchboard conversations. And they found that the word I is the most often used word in the English language. And the New York Telephone Company, decades ago, came up with the same answer. We use I a lot. One of the things I found interesting is I've been answering correspondence that people mail in. The notes that come from Africa, I can almost spot them instantly now because the word I is dropped. Even when they're writing in English, they'll tend to say am instead of I am. And it's a reflection of their language, and it's also a reflection of their culture. Which then makes me start to wonder about what's about our culture that we focus on I so much. Many people are interested in making friends. But it seems that to the majority of the world, friendliness is getting other people to be interested in you. They strive to impress other people with their accomplishments. They talk about their talent. They try to impress people with their wit. But I want you to think about something else just for a moment. Think about the lowly animal, the dog. Why are they such popular pets? True, some are kept for protection of the house. But most are kept for the simple reason that they focus on their masters. They're excited when they get home. They stick close, sometimes too close. They act as if it's the best thing in the world that you notice them. And for what? They aren't out to sell you something. They don't want you backing a bid on an office. It's genuine interest which makes us interested in return. Now, in Philippians chapter 2, I believe there's a verse that's key to all human interactions. Philippians chapter 2, and starting at verse 3. Philippians 2, verse 3, it says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others." Now, depending on your translation, it might say without rivalry, or without strife, or without selfish ambition, without empty conceit. Consider others better than yourselves. How do I go about making friends? Well, first off, we need to have a genuine interest in other people. Paul tells us how to go about considering others better than yourself. Look out for the interests of others. Take a look at Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and in verse 10. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Give preference to each other. Be fond of each other. The word preference actually comes from a Greek word, progeomeia, which means to lead the way or to outdo another. In fact, I think Mel read this passage earlier today, and his translation actually says, outdo each other. It's talking about taking the initiative. When it comes to showing kindness to one another, go first. Try to beat the other person to the first act of kindness. And when it comes to treating another person with respect, it means, again, going first. Trying to beat the other person to that first act of honor to the other person. That's the idea of how you gain people's respect and how you gain people's friendship. Can you imagine if everybody was out to try to outdo everybody else in kindness? I don't think it'll get as bad as the old Chippendale routines where they're constantly opening the door and saying, no, you first, you first, you first. But we need to be trying to think of how we can be kind to other people. Long ago, Polybius Sieras stated, we are interested in others when they are interested in us. And while that is the way many people operate, it's not the way Christians should behave. You don't wait until somebody's interested in you before you start showing interest in others. Show interest first. In fact, take a look at what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 17. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king. Give honor to all people. And in 1 Peter chapter 1, take a look at verse 22. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 22. Since you have in obedience to the truth purified your souls for sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart. Here's another idea. We need to be fervent in our love, sincere in our love. It can't be just some act or, well, I'm going to tolerate them. We should have interest in other people. There's an old book that I got down in my library. It's written by Dale Carnegie, titled How to Win Friends and Influence People. And in that book, he says, that too was one of the secrets of Theodore Roosevelt's astonishing popularity. Even his servants loved him. His valet, James Amos, relates this illuminating incident. My wife one time asked the president about a Bob White. She had never seen one, and he described it to her fully. Sometime later, the telephone at our cottage rang. My wife answered it, and it was Mr. Roosevelt himself. He called her, he said, to tell her that there was a Bob White outside her window, and that if she would look out, she might see it. Little things like that were so characteristic of him. How could employees keep from liking a man like that? How could anyone keep from liking him? Roosevelt called at the White House one day when the president and Mrs. Taft were away. His honest liking for humble people was shown by the fact that he greeted all the old White House servants by name, even the scullery maids. When he saw Alice, the kitchen maid, writes Archie Butt, he asked her if she still made cornbread. Alice told him that she sometimes made it for the servants, but no one ate it upstairs. They show bad taste, Roosevelt boomed. And I'll tell the president so when I see him. Alice brought him a piece on a plate, and he went over to the office, eating it as he went, and greeting gardeners and laborers as he passed. He addressed each person just as he addressed them in the past. What's important about that illustration? He saw all people the same. He was interested in everybody. He talked to everybody. He knew about them. Well, thinking back in my time when I used to work, at a computer company, I couldn't tell you the names of the janitor. I have no idea what was going on in his life. Saw him every once in a while. How much interest do we show in other people? God regards the lowly people. Take a look at Psalms 138. Psalms 138. And in verse 6. For though the Lord is exalted, yet he regards the lowly. But the haughty he knows from afar. If the creator of the universe can do this, then we ought to do so as well. Now going back to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, and look at verse 8. To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. Some of your translation says, be courteous. Then this is what's being described here. This is how we ought to treat one another. We should show respect and suppress your will so that another person takes precedence. In other words, submit. In fact, take a look at the advice Peter gives to young men in 1 Peter 5 and verse 5. You young men, likewise, be subject to your elders, and all of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. For God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. All of us should submit to one another. In fact, Paul says basically the same thing. In Ephesians chapter 5, Ephesians chapter 5, and in verse 21, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. We should put other people's interests first. Not just some, but all of us should do it. For everyone. What often ends up happening, and what we ought to be looking at, is competing for each other. In fact, we should be seeking out each other's best well-being. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, look at verse 24. Let no one seek his own good, but that of his neighbors. Am I looking out for other people's good? Or am I only in it for what's good for me? In that same chapter, go down to verse 33. Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, so that they may be saved. There's a story in the Old Testament that, if you think about it, is really strange coming from it from our culture. Take a look at Genesis 23. In Genesis 23, Sarah has died, and Abraham wants a place to bury her. And it says in verse 3, Genesis 23, verse 3, then Abraham rose from before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner among you. Give me a burial site among you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. The sons of Heth answered Abraham and saying to him, Hear us, O my lord. You are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our graves. None of us will refuse you his grave for burying your dead. So Abraham rose and bowed to the people of the land and the sons of Heth, and he spoke with them, saying, If it is your wish for me to bury my dead out of my sight, hear me, and approach Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns, which is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence for a burial site. Now Ephron was sitting among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the sons of Heth, even all who went in at the gate of his city, saying, No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that's in it. In the presence of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. Abraham bowed before the people of the land. He spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, If you will only please listen to me, I will give you the price of the field, accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there. Then Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, My lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver? What is that between you and me? So bury your dead. Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, commercial standard, and he bought it. Now think about how people haggle today. Oh, that land is worthless. How much do you want for it? Well, maybe not that much. I'll go shopping elsewhere. Both of the men in this negotiation were wanting to do something nice to the other person. Abraham insisted, I want to pay full price. Ephron was insisting, I want to give it to you. They were having an argument who's going to out to the other one. That was the negotiations. Only when Ephron let it slip that he thought it was worth 400 shekels. And then Abraham says, fine, here, 400 shekels. Imagine trying to buy a used car that way. I need a car. Salesperson says, well, pick whichever one you want off the lot and it's yours. The silver Lexus, that's the one that interests me. I'll pay full price for it. Fine choice. But you don't need it to pay me. It's yours. Well, if you're willing to give it, then you must let me pay for it. What? It lists only for $38,000. But what's that between you and I? Take the car with my blessing. And to which the wealthy man then pays him the full price. That's the type of negotiation we just saw. This is a glimpse of what mankind used to be like. They didn't dicker down to the least acceptable price. Men negotiate seeking the better position of the other person. Sadly, you can't do that today because you don't find people wanting to do the other side of it. But we see a similar characteristic in David. Take a look at First Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. David wanted to give a sacrifice to God because God had stopped a plague. And so in 1 Chronicles 21 and starting at verse 21. As David came to Ornan, Ornan looked and saw David and went out from the threshing floor and prostrated himself before David with his face to the ground. Then David said to Ornan, "Give me the site of this threshing floor, that I may build on it an altar to the Lord. For the full price you shall give it to me, that the plague may be restrained from the people." Ornan said to David, "Take it for yourself, and let my lord king do as is good in his sight. See, I will give the oxen for burnt offerings, and the threshing sledges for wood, and the wheat for a grain offering. I give it all of it." But David said to Ornan, "No, but I will surely buy it for the full price. For I will not take what is yours for the Lord, nor a burnt offering which costs me nothing." So David gave Ornan 600 shekels of gold by weight for the site. And 600 shekels is a good price. He probably paid far more than what the place was worth. But notice David's attitude. I want to give something to God, and I'm not going to let somebody else give me what I'm going to give to God. I'm going to pay full price. He was seeking the good of the person he was asking for the land and for the sacrifice. What we see instead among people, instead of competing for other people, they compete against other people. They're trying to take advantage over everybody else. Not only on their purchases, but it ends up influencing all aspects of life. In Galatians chapter 5, Paul gives this warning to Christians. Galatians 5 and verse 14. "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, in the statement, 'You shall love your neighbor as yourself.' But if you bite and devour one another, take care that you're not consumed by one another." And this is what ends up happening. People get annoyed. They start bickering. They start taking chunks out of each other with words. They lose sight of trying to be what's best for the other person and doing what is best for the other person. Paul warns in Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2 and verse 8. "But to those who are selfishly ambitious and do not obey the truth, but obey unrighteousness, wrath and indignation." Those people who are selfishly ambitious, they want what's best for them, even if it costs other people. They face God's wrath. In fact, that's where evil exists, is what James tells us in James chapter 3. James chapter 3 and in verse 14. "But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every evil thing." What's the cause of a lot of our problems? I was hearing it on the news today. People are saying, you know, what's different between now, 20 years after 9/11? Back in 9/11, everybody was trying to pull together. They were concerned. They were focused on each other. Now we're divided. Now we're arguing with each other. They've become selfishly ambitious. They're only interested in what they get. And that's where evil comes from. You know what? We're not in a competition against each other. Take a look at 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 12. "For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding. Am I in competition with Mel or Gary or Austin or anybody else here? No. We're all working for the same thing. We're not competing with each other. Why should I compare myself with somebody else? In Proverbs chapter 25, Proverbs 25 and verse 27. It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glory to seek out one's own glory. Therein is what I need to remember. It is not to my honor if I seek out pats on the back. Instead of pushing myself, if anything, if other people want to congratulate you or congratulate me, that's great. But I shouldn't be seeking it out. I shouldn't be pushing for it. In Proverbs 27, look at verse 2. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. When we get focused on ourselves, we become conceited. And conceit is empty. Alfred Adler, a psychologist, said, "It is the individual who is not interested in his fellow man who has the greatest difficulties in life and provides the greatest injury. It is from among such individuals that all human failures spring." You remember in the third letter of John, he mentions a man named Diotrephes. We remember him not for the good that he might have done, but the fact that he thought so much of himself that he would not even welcome the venerated Apostle John to the congregation where he was at. Take a look at 3 John. 3 John, verse 9. "I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say." Imagine that. Somebody who thinks they actually know more than one of Christ's apostles. Because he loves himself more. That's why Paul told Titus and warns us as well that we need to remember where we came from. Take a look at Titus chapter 3 and in verse 1. "Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. For we also once were foolish ourselves, disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our life in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another. But when the kindness of God our Savior and his love for mankind appeared, he saved us not on the basis of deeds which we had done in righteousness, but according to his mercy by the washing of regeneration and renewing of the Holy Spirit." How should I see myself? How should I see other people? Even the ones who are caught up in sin out in the world. Paul says, remember, we were like that. We had problems like that. Until God saved us. We ought to be sympathetic. Encouraging. Helping people. That's why also Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 not to get caught up in useless arguments. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 3. If anyone advocates a different doctrine and does not agree with sound words, those of our Lord Jesus Christ, and with a doctrine conforming to godliness, he is conceited and understands nothing. But he has a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which rise envy, strife, abusive language, evil suspicions, and constant friction between men of depraved mind and deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Look at what happens. Conceit ends up causing all sorts of arguments, picking about words and everything else, trying to up one on the other person. Rather, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, when he describes love, he says, love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous, love does not brag, and is not arrogant. It does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own, is not provoked. It does not take an account of wrong suffered. Notice that. Love is not about me and my what I deserve or want. And again, going back to Proverbs, this time 26. Proverbs 26, look at verse 12. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. When we put ourselves first, we look and say, hey, I want the glory. All that does is leads to ruin. Take a look at Proverbs 17. Proverbs 17 and verse 19. He who loves transgression loves strife. He who raises his door seeks destruction. And that phrase may sound a little strange, but what he's talking about, you build your house and you put this big fancy entryway on your house. You may have a little shack, but you put this big fancy doorway into your house. What's going to happen? Think about it for a little while. Everybody comes down that street and says, ooh, got money, including the robbers. You just set yourself up as a target. Putting yourself up makes you a target for others who are not interested in you. When we start raising our own and saying, look at me, look how good I am, or look how great I am, you become a target. Rather, we're told in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 2. With all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing tolerance for one another in love. That's in lowliness, bearing with others in love. That's what we ought to be doing. In James chapter 2, James talks about the royal law. In James chapter 2 and verse 8, if, however, you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing well. In other words, fulfilling this command means removing pride from our lives and replacing it with true humility. See, pride doesn't have the effect you think it is. I know a lot of people say, oh, I got to promote myself because if I don't do it, nobody else will. But take a look at Proverbs again. Proverbs 29. And look at verse 23. A man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor. See, pride leads to conflicts. Again in Proverbs 13. Proverbs 13 and verse 10. Through insolence comes nothing but strife, but wisdom is with those who receive counsel. And one last verse in Proverbs 8 and in verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way, and the perverted mouth I hate. God doesn't like pride. Other people don't like pride. How do you make friends? It's not by promoting yourself or taking pride. It's by humility. It's by being interested in other people and putting the interests of other people first. And surprisingly, other people then become interested in you. And they feel safe around you. And they want to be with you. And you gain friends. It's not magic. It's just a little bit of humility. I hope you'll think about those things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brother on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of selection.